This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Danny Wisentowski. When it comes to prosecutors, the St. Louis region is facing a crossroads. St. Louis County Prosecuting Attorney Wesley Bell is making another leap into politics as he campaigns to unseat U.S. Representative Cori Bush. And in St. Louis City, which calls its prosecuting attorney a circuit attorney, the office has a new top prosecutor in Gabe Gore, but he's still grappling with the fallout of former circuit attorney Kim Gardner, who resigned in May last year. These are big questions, and the stakes are high. Last week, a coalition of criminal justice reform groups released the first of a series of reports, and the group is tackling those big questions. What should a prosecutor's office be doing, and what would it mean for those policies to be progressive, and not just in name, but in reality? Joining me now to talk about this coalition and its first report is Mike Milton. He is the founder and executive director of the Freedom Community Center in St. Louis. Mike, welcome back to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much, Danny. It's a pleasure.
All right, Mike. Now, Freedom Community Center is part of this coalition. That group is called the Prosecutor Organizing Table. It released the first of that series of reports last week. But this is not actually the first time this coalition has put out a report or tried to undertake this mission of evaluating prosecutors in our region. So explain the focus of this report on prosecutors and why now?
As a table, we started in 2020, right on the hams of the movement across the country of the progressive prosecutors movement. And the goal was always to figure out how we can influence policy changes that directly impacts or counters the harm of mass incarceration. And both our prosecutors at the time, Wesley Bell and Kim Gardner, promised us and was elected overwhelmingly, especially Kim Gardner. I think she received 84% of the vote because of taking a stance against the criminal legal system. And I think when we look at the electoral landscape in the city, we have came up to a conclusion that that the arrest and incarceration model ultimately fails us. And so what does it look like to build alternatives to consider the root causes of why violence exists in our communities and start it from and grasp it from the root versus using incarceration that disproportionately impacts Black and poor people?
Now, you know, I mentioned that this report, you know, this was already an attempt that was made in 2020. And in the report, it lays out some of the metrics that you're going to be using to evaluate these offices in St. Louis County and St. Louis City. Those are going to be in the later reports. Now, the metrics include things like transparency, charging decisions, pretrial detention, conviction and sentencing, commitment to community-based alternatives. Those are the metrics I've read off from the report. But it strikes me a lot of those are questions about the basic functioning of a prosecutor's office. How many people are they charging? How are they processing people through the criminal justice system? And it does seem like those basic questions are kind of hard to get at. It's hard to get the data. Do you think you can actually get answers to those?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly why transparency is a pillar of what we're trying to measure. You know, obviously stakeholders, all stakeholders, but especially prosecutors, is accountable to the people in which elected them. And so we need to know exactly what's happening in those offices so we can move beyond the campaign promises and the rhetoric and the talking points. But really, how is the office functioning in real time? And so, yes, I believe that it's possible. There's prosecutors across the country, Tim Fox, Larry Krasner, Eric Gonzalez in Brooklyn, who produce reports to show their impact. And so it's super important for us to have access to that information as a community, especially as we consider that they will continue to run for these seats. And prosecutors have so much power. They have so much power, devastating power, and so much that affects communities and people. And so it's even more important that we have access to that information.
Now, Mike, to your point, you know, prosecutors, their primary power that they do have, they decide the charges someone's going to have. They can, you know, the years someone might get. In some cases, they can really influence sentencing. Now, in terms of what your group has tried to be evaluating, though, it notes that since 2020, we have seen a gap between what the candidates promised and what they prioritized. And those promises in terms of what does it mean to be progressive in an office that functions in a great deal of ways, in a very hard line kind of way, in a you committed a crime, you do the time. Mm-hmm. That gap, though, that you mentioned between what the candidates promised and what they actually did, what is that gap?
Yeah, the gap is huge. And, you know, we'll unveil more of that in the upcoming reports. But when we consider something like cash bail, which, of course, is predicated on people's wealth. People are too poor to afford their freedom. And what we also notice is, as the note, as the front door to mass incarceration, as 90% of the growth in mass incarceration happens because of pretrial detention, it's a very serious deal. And so for prosecutors to come out and say that they want to end cash bail or reduce cash bail or reduce pretrial detention, it's very serious. And so, and also have impacts on people's lives. Obviously, people lose their jobs, cars, kids, access to their kids. They lose everything. And they're not convicted of a crime. And so it's even more important for us to evaluate these individual measures, because they promise us. They promise us that they understood the impacts of mass incarceration, and they promised to do something about it. And so that's one of the reasons why we are shaping the report the way that we are, because we need access to that information. But what we're seeing in St. Louis City, both with Kim and with Gabe Gore, is that they overwhelmingly charge people, ask for or recommend no bond for even low-level victimless crimes. Just last week, there was a case with a kid, I think he was 18, no priors. He was charged with a tampering charge and resisting arrest, but only because he allegedly ran on foot. But he was charged with a no bond. So that means that he would have to stay inside of incarceration with no option of release before he's even convicted of the things that he's accused of. And the same thing with Wesley. We're seeing an overwhelming amount of opportunities where we could advocate for people's release, or he could advocate for people's release, but instead he has turned towards using cash bail and pretrial detention. So there's obviously a gap. There's a huge gap, and I think the public needs to know.
Now, Mike, I would imagine that folks in the prosecutor's office, if they heard you say that, they might say, well, look, the judge has a big role here. You know, the judge is the one who releases someone. Put this in context, maybe, because there is this tension of the prosecutor's office saying, well, we can only just use the evidence that police give us, or we can only, present the judge with what we have. But you're really saying that the prosecutor's office is driving this system in a great deal of ways. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we're going to come out with a court watch report soon. But for what we have gathered, the judges are actually choosing to not take the attorney's recommendations for a series of charges. In fact, if they did, the jail population would be at least another 200 more people in St. Louis City alone. And so, I think that we have to keep in mind that these are people who are just simply accused. And then when we consider the rule, Supreme Court Rule 3301, which says that you must consider someone's financial ability to pay before you sentence them for pretrial detention. And even after that, you have to come back and see why they're still arrested, unless they're a danger to public safety or flight risk. They're not considering those two, at least from the data that we've collected, they're not considering those things in real time. In fact, it seems like they're just taking it on the face of the charge. Mm. Or some political motivations, as we've seen, with Kim Gardner and the other things that's happening in the community, or the harm that's happening in the community. It seems to be a response to media and the outcry for media versus doing what's actually equitable and constitutional.
So, let's ask on that subject, because I think you bring up a good point. We brought up St. Louis Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner. She did resign last year. But for the last several years, if you were going to have a conversation about the nature of prosecution in our region, that conversation was often dominated by how you felt about Kim Gardner and the tension in that office. What would you say to folks who might still be in that mindset, who might still be looking at the role of a prosecutor in the context of controversy or someone not doing enough?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Kim had issues, and those issues both affected people's lives. I mean, from our standpoint, we saw that because of the consistent Nolley refiling, which is they were dropping the case, they didn't have enough evidence to prosecute the person, so they would drop the case and then refile it quick enough so the person doesn't get released, was leading to people being in jail for more than 1,000 days. Some people that we ran into were in jail pre-trial for more than 1,000 days. They would get out, and then ultimately their cases would get dismissed. Of the 4,000 people that we helped get out of jail when I was at the Bail Project, 50% of those cases were ultimately dismissed because they were not good for it. And so there was deep, devastating impacts of Kim's reign and ultimately the prosecutors. But that does not mean that we turn away for what we know and has been proven across the world, across the country, of what actually keeps us safe, which means that people have access to quality health care. They have access to jobs and education. They have access to mental health care. Those are the things that actually reduces violence in our communities. And so in real time, I'll say this really quickly as a call out to public news media. Oftentimes what happens is that we see this one case seems to drive more people being incarcerated. And often what we have seen with the work that we do at Freedom Community Center, that when people are released and they have access to those services and they have mentorship and they have people who walk with them intimately, they come back to court, which is supposed to be the original purpose of cash bail in the beginning, right? But also they go on with their lives and they make amends and they transform. And so there are alternatives other than the legal system. It doesn't have to be jail or just, you know, lawlessness. It can be support and care and access to resources so people can fight their case from a position of freedom and also liberty. And I'll say this as an ending part. It's also super important as people in these cases are often situations that happen between family members, and they have moved on and want to move on with each other and do restorative justice like work that we do at Freedom Community Center. And so they also want to take accountability, and the legal system just does not provide any of those options.
Yeah. Now, Mike, we talked a bit earlier this morning, and you mentioned something interesting that, you know, that when folks are looking back at Kim Gardner, you know, with the amount of emphasis there was in that office, you know, you said something like, you know, some of the criticism was fair and some of it wasn't. And I would think, you know, for folks who look at Wesley Bell's office, you know, folks, I think there's praise for it. And then folks may have felt like they wanted to see, you know, prosecution of Darren Wilson, the officer who shot Mike Brown. That was a big piece of that and disappointment in that office. Are there things in those offices that have advanced this notion of progressive prosecutor where they did accomplish to some degree the promises they made?
Yeah, I mean, I can go on and on about both of them, about, you know, ways in which they implemented things that were helpful for Kim. Just in short, Kim, the summons versus warrants situation, it seemed that she understood that these low-level victimless crimes could be handled outside of the legal system. And she issued summons. And in that time, just as a evidence point, in that time, at the lowest of the jail population, the city was also saying how much the murder rate had dropped in the city. And so it's not that more people incarcerated or more people not incarcerated equals lawlessness. Actually, more people get access to resources. And Kim was able to at least talk about and implement some progressive promises in that way. And with Wesley Bell, you know, he talks all the time about how he helped reduce the jail population, which, you know, that's arguable between McArthur and the Bell Project in St. Louis County. But there was real, there was a moment where in St. Louis County, about 19% of, there was a drop in the jail population of 19% at that time between 2018 and 2020. But right now, if you look at the stats, the jail population is steady increasing. And it seems to be that there's been a change in his political stance on some of these issues that he ran on and promised us.
And Mike, in just the last 20 seconds or so, can you let us know what's going to be in the next report and what people can expect that you'll have in there?
Yeah, so the next report we're releasing is Wesley with those five metrics.
St. Louis County, Wesley Bell's office.
Yep, St. Louis County. So we will be evaluating and releasing the information that we received in the research for Wesley Bell. And then after that, we will release our report around Gabe Gore.
All right. Thanks, Mike. And we'll be looking forward to what's in those reports. Mike Milton is the founder and executive director of the Freedom Community Center in St. Louis. The group is part of a coalition called the Prosecutor Organizing Table that's taking a critical look at St. Louis and St. Louis County's prosecuting offices. We have more info on that at stlpr.org on our website. Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Danny. It's a pleasure.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
St. Louis on the Air proudly supports local artists by using music from Life Creative Group.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on the Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.